Hello, and welcome to the Chimed Investor Update Call. My name is Courtney, and I'll be your coordinator for today's event. Please note, this conference is being recorded, and for the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If you need assistance at any time, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you will be connected to an operator. I will now hand you over to your host, Christian Hogg, Chief Executive Officer, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you, Courtney. Welcome everybody to the ESMO conference call, in which we plan to take everybody through the surufatinib SANET-EP phase III data, along with further information around surufatinib and neuroendocrine tumors. What we're gonna try and do today is try and get through the presentation in about 35 minutes, leaving, you know, 20-25 minutes for Q&A at the end. If we go to page number three, the agenda, I'll give a brief introduction on where surufatinib is at the moment. That will be followed by a discussion of the presentation that was given at ESMO yesterday by Dr. Weiguo Su, our Chief Scientific Officer and main board director of Chimed. That will be followed by a presentation around the phase I-B data for surufatinib in the U.S. by Marek Kania, our SVP and Chief Medical Officer in international, basically United States and Europe. That will be followed by a discussion on neuroendocrine tumors by Dr. James Yao, one of our key investigators. We're extremely happy and pleased that Dr. Yao could make time to join us today. Dr. Yao is chair of the gastrointestinal oncology at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. So, you know, Dr. Yao will be able to give his insights, clinical insights on surufatinib and NET. And then I'll finish it off with a brief summary at the end, and then we'll go into Q&A. So if we go quickly onto page five, on the introduction. So we see the kind of the latest situation for surufatinib with regards to China and NET, neuroendocrine tumors. We, on the top part of the slide, you can see the two phase III studies that we have been, registration studies that we've been enrolling and running for the last few years. The top section, SANET-EP, is the phase III study that was presented yesterday and has obviously met all its primary endpoints and efficacy endpoints, and we'll go into that in more detail later. Below that, the SANET-P study is a phase III study in pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors. We hope to be able to reach an interim analysis on that study early next year. So that would complete the set, as it were, really, you know, show surufatinib's efficacy across all neuroendocrine tumor patients. SANET-EP is everything excluding pancreatic, and SANET-P is pancreatic. So that would be all neuroendocrine tumor patients covered by those two big phase III studies. You can see at the bottom of page five, we're now very occupied in preparing for our NDA submission at the end of this year, in the coming month or so. And also looking forward into 2020, it's about navigating the whole NDA process of inspections and regulatory interactions. And you can see on the bottom part of page five there, it's also about building out our commercial team. Today, we have about 70 people in our oncology commercial team, and we would expect by the end of next year to be fully covering China in readiness for the launch of surufatinib. So, that's a lot of work that's ongoing. Page six, briefly, what else is going on for surufatinib? In the top section, you can see Marek is managing, along with Dr. Yao, the call it the U.S. or slash global phase II, phase III thinking and planning. We at ESMO yesterday presented data from our phase I-B/II study in PNET, very interesting because you get to see how patients who have failed on Afinitor do on surufatinib, and Marek will talk about that later. We plan to have an end of phase two meeting at the end of this year, hopefully, if the FDA is able to do that. And our plan would be to start global registration studies on surufatinib in NET early next year sometime. So we're extremely excited about that global plan, and we've worked hard to build a team underneath Marek to run all of this. The second section, biliary tract cancer, this is a very difficult indication in which we are interested. We've been running studies in China for some time now in sort of early phase two studies. Now we're in a phase 2b3 study, and we hope to reach interim analysis on the first 80 patients of that biliary tract cancer study, the phase three study, middle of next year. And then finally, the PD-1 collaboration with Junsha, one of the first local PD-1s launched in China. We're now very aggressively working on dose expansion or planning dose expansion into multiple tumor types with surufatinib in combination with Toyi, which is the Junsha PD-1. So that's in summary the situation. Now I'll hand it over to Dr. Weiguo Su to take everybody through the SANET EP data. Over to you, Weiguo.
All right. Thank you very much, Christian, and hello, everyone. I'll just, in the next 10, 12 minutes or so, I will take you through basically the ESMO presentation on the SANET EP trial. Maybe we can go to slide 10. Some background information on SANET EP. Well, basically, treatments are very limited for NET patients, and extra pancreatic NET patients in particular. Available target therapies today include Sutent for PNET and Afinitor for PNET and GI lung. Surufatinib has a unique MOA targeting both angiogenesis and immune modulation, particularly on TAMs and MDSCs, targeting three major targets, VEGFRs, FGFR1, and CSF1R. Previously, we reported encouraging efficacy of surufatinib in NET patients, including those failed on everolimus. Well, next page, here's the study design for the SANET EP. Patient population, progressive advanced extrapancreatic NET patients, randomized 2-to-1 ratio, with three layers of stratification to receive either surufatinib or placebo and continuous treatment until disease progression. Patients on placebo, once confirmed disease progression, had an opportunity to cross over to open-label surufatinib treatment. The study also set up a blinded independent image review committee to help assess PFS and to ensure that the results will support the primary endpoint, which is investigator assess the PFS. Next slide. Here are the key criteria, eligibility criteria. Grade 1-2 advanced the patients with locally advanced or metastatic, documented radiological disease progression within the last 12 months. A key point to note is that prior use of VEGF-VEGFR inhibitors were excluded. Next slide. At the data cutoff, which is March 31st this year, a total of 198 patients were randomized, 129 patients into the surufatinib group, and 69 patients in placebo group. At the data cutoff, roughly 68% of patients in the surufatinib group were discontinued, and about roughly 77% discontinued treatment in the placebo group. 53 patients. Out of the 53, 30 patients crossed over to open-label surufatinib treatment. The next slide. This baseline demographics, overall reasonably balanced between the surufatinib and placebo, except in a few categories, for instance, ECOG status, a bit more ECOG PS1 in the surufatinib group comparing to placebo group, 44 versus 33. Also in the subtypes, where you can see in the lung, 9.3% in the surufatinib group versus almost 16% in placebo group. And toward the end of the bottom of the table, with regard to previous local regional therapy of the liver mets, again, a bit imbalanced, 34% in surufatinib group comparing to 23 in placebo group. But overall, reasonably balanced across all the subgroups. And off note, in this study, this is actually the first randomized study in this patient population in China. As you can see, these patients, 84% of these patients were grade 2. Compared to most, you know, in the previous studies with Sutin or everolimus in global studies, typically 70 to 80% grade 1 patients. So these were much more difficult patients, probably with more aggressive disease. Next slide. Here's the result for the primary endpoint, efficacy endpoint. Clearly, surufatinib significantly improved the PFS with a hazard ratio of 0.334 and a p-value less than 0.0001. And based on that, the IDMC recommended early termination. Next slide. The subgroup analysis revealed that all subgroups favor surufatinib treatment. Next slide, BIRC assessed the PFS was conducted, as I mentioned, and the result supports surufatinib efficacy. The discordance is common in this field in particular. A post hoc adjudication for 35 patients with PFS discrepancy greater than 4 weeks between the investigator assessment versus IRC was conducted by a radiologist, Dr. Choi, and a clinician, Dr. Pavel. The conclusion, again, supports the primary endpoint. Next slide. A sensitivity analysis was conducted and appeared to show that the prior local regional therapies of liver mets might be a contributor to the discordance between the investigators versus IRC assessed PFS. As you can see here, a total of 60 patients with prior local regional therapies. And if these patients were taken out and the discordance between investigator and IRC was much smaller, both in terms of hazard ratio and p-value. Next slide. The study also met the secondary efficacy endpoint. Both ORR and DCR were significantly better in the surufatinib group. The OS was not statistically analyzed because it was immature, only 18% event. Next slide. Median duration of surufatinib treatment was roughly 7 months, and the relative intensity, considering dose interruption and reduction for surufatinib, was 86% comparing to 97% for placebo, suggesting very good tolerability. The next couple of slides summarize the safety profile, and clearly the safety profile was consistent with previously reported, nothing special to note, with hypertension and proteinuria as the most common AEs, and which were readily manageable. So going to slide 23. Surufatinib with a unique MOA targeting both angiogenesis and immune microenvironment modulation significantly improved the PFS for this patient population. As a matter of fact, all subgroups favored surufatinib treatment. And it was generally well tolerated with a consistent safety profile. And the study was, as a result, early terminated based on the recommendation by the IDMC. In addition, surufatinib has multiple global trials as well as China trials ongoing, including a phase 3 randomized registration intent study in pancreatic NETs, which Christian mentioned that we hope to read out sometime early next year, and also global development led by Merrick. And America is going to cover for you our global development plan. I will stop here, and we'll let Merrick take over.
Thank you, Weigo, and hello, everyone. Great to be here with you. I will review our phase 1b study, which, as Christian mentioned, we reported preliminary results at ESMO. If you can move to slide 27, this briefly describes the design of the study. This study is part of our ongoing U.S. IND development among other programs we have. As we've been building our team, capable team, since last year, we are also making very encouraging progress with our ongoing investigations. As you can see on this slide, trial was designed in two parts. One was dose escalation part, which primary endpoint of that part was to define safety and tolerability with intent to confirm our recommended phase 2 dose, which happened, which I will summarize later on. On this slide, you see cohorts and escalation levels. On the lower end, you see several cohorts, which are expansion cohorts, as numbers indicate next to each cohort. Today, I will be discussing PNET cohort as well, BTC. We have ongoing as well enrollment for EPNET, that is prematurely to discuss it. We also are ready to start enrollment of our sarcoma cohort, which will start very soon. Primary endpoint of that cohort will be definition of PFS, and secondary endpoint objective response rate, disease control rate, typical endpoint in this phase of development. What I would like to highlight, as you can see on the left-hand side, we've been working with distinguished and very experienced sites in the United States, and we continue expanding our collaborations globally. And those investigators were very productive in enrolling to our studies. As Christian said, Dr. Yao is with us, and we are grateful for his contribution in his and progress of this study, and he may comment on his experience later on. If you can move to slide 28, this slide really summarizes in a high level both safety and efficacy. On the left-hand side, you can see summary of safety, which I'm not going to go to too much details, but pretty much is very consistent with what Dr. Su discussed. Nothing unexpected, diarrhea, fatigue, nausea, was one of the most common treatment emerging adverse events. Of note, a relatively low hypertension and proteinuria grade 3, all manageable. Numerically, actually appears a bit on the lower end. On the right-hand side, you can see 25 evaluable patients, 12 in TNET and 13 in BTC. As you can see in the table, we observed two confirmed objective responses and disease control rate of very encouraging levels. On the BTC efficacy side, high activity, one unconfirmed responder, but studies are still ongoing. If you can move to the next slide, you can see more details, and this is a really important slide, very busy one, but I think it illustrates how heavily pretreated those patients are in this phase 1B study. All patient enrollment criteria was required to fail Everolimus. So as you can see, depicted in this slide, it's highlighting that fact. All patients were heavily pretreated with up to 8 lines of therapies. Some patients were pretreated with everolimus and sunitinib. And of note, what was very encouraging for us, we had 2 confirmed responders as well, 2 unconfirmed responders. Most patients are still ongoing, as you can see, 9 out of 15 still on study with relatively short duration on study. So obviously this data will be maturing and will be completing and reporting as we progress with this study. I think what this slide also highlights importance of multiple lines of therapies as well as different mechanisms of actions where patients have options and physicians have options to choose between different mechanisms of action and actually overcoming some resistance to prior therapies. So definitely addition of new treatment option is very encouraging, and we are very encouraged to see this result, but also SUNMED-EP results altogether, I think, paint a right picture. If you can move to slide 30, I will conclude with a few really summary conclusions. This study helped us to define and confirm, actually, 300 milligram as maximum tolerated dose and recommended phase 2 dose for international development. This is consistent with all studies in China, and we'll continue this level development with this dose level. Anti-tumor activity we see in heavily pretreated patients is very encouraging, and we'll definitely take great lessons from that. As Dr. Su highlighted, we have a number of ongoing studies, and we see encouraging responses. And as we go, we are in the process of planning a global plan, a development plan, as well as regulatory paths for next steps, which we can discuss in a later part of this call. So thank you very much for your attention. This really brings me to a great opportunity to again hand over to Dr. Yao, who can put everything in perspective from a Western perspective, and what does it mean for him and his colleagues. Dr. Yao.
Well, good morning. So I'll start with slide 32. So to put, this morning's data, ESMO data, into some context and perspective, I just want to share some, data on both the unmet need and where we are in the disease in the context of the SUNMED-EP trial. Neuroendocrine tumors previously were thought to be fairly rare diseases. However, the diagnosed incidence has been continuing to be on the rise in the population-based registries. Here's an update our group did in JAMA Oncology showing that the diagnosed incidence rate is rising. Likely, this is due to improved diagnostic and recognition of the disease. Because this group of cancer patients, now to slide 33, have relatively longer survival comparing to their more aggressive adenocarcinoma counterparts. The patients also tend to have higher, longer survival, which means the prevalence of the disease is also continuing to be on the rise. Here again, just looking at disease prevalence in terms of the rise, especially in well-differentiated neuroendocrine tumors, and the rise by the prevalence in terms of different primary site, which is you're seeing the rise in all the different primary sites. We have made the progress now on slide 34 in terms of the developing new treatments for neuroendocrine tumors. However, today I would say the treatment landscape is still quite fragmented. If you look at the available therapy and where the phase 3 data gives evidence, you see that in different areas there's very different scenarios. In lung neuroendocrine tumor, currently there's only one drug that's FDA approved and demonstrated efficacy, which is everolimus, for example. In the GI tract, you have some somatostatin analogs in the earlier phases of the treatment, and in the tubular GI tract, you have then the everolimus in, based on the rating 4 data, and in small bowel based on NETTER-1, although the U.S. approval includes other portion of the GI tract as well for Lutathera. And for the pancreatic NET, there's more treatment options available, including somatostatin analog chemotherapies, sunitinib and everolimus. Beyond the fragmentation of the kind of what's available therapy by primary site, there are other limitations as well, which is slide 35. In lanreotide, somatostatin analogs, we are lacking data in lung neuroendocrine tumors, and no data in the more aggressive neuroendocrine tumors, those with Ki-67s above 10%. With Lutathera, we do not have approval in lung neuroendocrine tumor, and because this mechanism of action, it is limited to high somatostatin receptor expressing tumors. This will have different implications in different primary sites. For example, in small bowel, the percentage of tumors with somatostatin receptor expression is quite high, but in other primary sites, such as in rectum and so forth, the rate of somatostatin receptor expression may be lower. Then you have everolimus. The data for everolimus right now is probably the broadest in terms of primary site. Nonetheless, it is not FDA approved for functional extra-pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors, and it's not funded in some countries after other targeted agents. Then finally, you have sunitinib, which is only in pancreas, and similar to everolimus, is not funded in many countries after other agents. Then if you look at in slide 36, the slide showing VEGF inhibitor in extra-pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors, this is an area I think many investigators has been very, very interested in. In fact, we did some of our earliest trials as far back as nearly 20 years ago. But most of the study have not been able to show definitive benefit, likely due to the fact that these were smaller single-arm phase 2 studies. So that will be true for sunitinib and sorafenib and cabozantinib showing encouraging PFS, but in a single-arm study was unable to draw any definitive conclusions. And by the way, the conclusion column there are from the primary papers and the presentations of from the author themselves. For pazopanib, we did do both single-arm phase 2 and more recently the cooperative group did a randomized phase 2 that showed improvement in progression-free survival. And for bevacizumab, it showed no difference to compared to interferon. So you have then the SENET-EP, which is the first clinical trial that's a randomized phase 3 trial to definitively show improved progression-free survival. And that's the context of the data at this point. Going to slide 37, the data from the ESMO presentation, the surufatinib in extrapancreatic NET showed improvement in progression-free survival and with a hazard ratio of 0.334. So a number of sensitivity analysis and supporting analysis were also presented. Remember the in slide, now we're on slide 38, that the primary reason we do phase 3 studies is to do hypothesis testing. And in the primary analysis showed it significantly improves progression-free survival. The secondary endpoints, overall response rate and disease control rate showed benefit consistent with a treatment benefit in terms of improvement in both overall response rate and disease control rate. Right? Then a number of sensitivity analysis were conducted, and these all showed the same direction in terms of benefit, in terms of the benefiting PFS, so confirms the statistical robustness of the primary analysis. So overall, you have a positive phase 3 trial in area with unmet need, and secondary endpoints and the sensitivity analysis supports the statistical robustness of the study itself. So I think that's the context I would offer in terms of the contribution of the SENET-EP study to the field of neuroendocrine tumors. So I'm going to conclude there and hand it back to Christian.
Thanks very much, James. Very helpful. Okay, so I'll just finish off on the last two slides of the presentation, then we can go into Q&A. If you go to page 40, these two slides are just to get a sense. Some of it's already been covered in the discussion so far today, but page 40 is a very detailed slide, but what we try to do is lay out the treatment landscape in the United States primarily, where you've got a prevalence of neuroendocrine tumors of about 140,000 patients. So it's not a small prevalence. Generally a relatively low incidence, but a high prevalence given patients tend to live for a fair amount of time with this disease. I think looking across the chart from left to right, you see the left-hand side of the chart, the somatostatin-based therapies generally are used in earlier stage patients. The targeted therapies generally in more advanced patients. But the point that really is drawn from this chart is how fragmented everything is and as James has just said in his presentation, how treatments today are generally approved in relatively narrow subsections of neuroendocrine tumors, and that's what we're trying to do with surufatinib is to bring a therapy to market that truly has efficacy across broad spectrum neuroendocrine tumor patient population. And as Marek said earlier, you know, these are patients living with the disease for many years in some cases, and they need to have a portfolio of treatment alternatives to use. So Afinitor or Everolimus is obviously approved in many subsets of NET, but patients progress on Everolimus and they need something else, and that's really what we are looking to do with surufatinib: broad spectrum efficacy and also addressing patient populations that have essentially run out of treatment alternatives. Moving on to page 41, the China net environment. You know, very interesting chart from James's presentation around the increased prevalence or per population prevalence of net over the last 30 years as diagnosis or improvements in diagnosis have emerged. If you look at page 41, you get a sense of the China opportunity. There's a lot of assumptions on this chart, but the one number on this chart that is not an assumption is the annual incidence of net in China, which is 67,600 at the last reported date. The incidence in the U.S. is a little bit under 20,000, I think around 19,000. So you've essentially got 3.5-4 times the amount of net patients in China as you do in the United States. But the big question we have to ask ourselves is, you know, are these patients really the full extent of the problem in China, or is NET underdiagnosed in China? I would assume that the sophistication of diagnosis in the United States is pretty significantly far ahead of that in China. So we may actually be looking at an even larger patient population in China than this chart would show. Even with this base sort of conservative view, we would estimate there's probably between 200,000 and 300,000 non-pancreatic neuroendocrine tumor patients in China. And today, those patients have very limited treatment options. So, you know, we are working to bring our program, our surufatinib, to these patients as quickly as we can, as we've mentioned earlier. I think ultimately, we're looking to bring that therapy to these patients at a price that is accessible to patients and get it on the reimbursement list and really try to provide a broad therapeutic opportunity or option for these patients. So we will be training up physicians in China to identify NET as early as it can be so that our treatments, surufatinib, can be used as early as possible in China. So I'll leave it at that. I think we've done pretty well, 38 minutes versus the 35 we set out to do, and we'll leave the next 20 or so minutes for Q&A. So hand it over to Courtney to manage that.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure your line is unmuted locally, and you will be advised when to ask your question. So star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our first question comes in from the line of Richard Parkes, calling from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, yes, it's Richard Parkes from Deutsche Bank. Hopefully you can hear me okay.
We can, Richard.
Okay, perfect. So I've got a few questions. First one, could you just talk about the importance to the regulatory agencies of the independently reviewed PFS versus the investigator assessed PFS. I know that's also been a regulatory debate for drugs in this area in the past, and just sort of your confidence that a single trial will still be acceptable for approval, given that the independent review wasn't significant but a lower statistical hurdle. So that's the first question. Maybe we'll just take them one by one if that's okay.
Okay, well, maybe I'll ask Weiguo to answer that question. And maybe James also.
I think this is obviously more of a review issue, so I can't really comment on the regulatory behalf. But all I can say is we've been in contact with China CBE and every step of the way, including the primary endpoint being investigator-assessed PFS, the BIIRC and being supportive. So all I can say is we're all on, we're on the same page, I can't comment any further on that, and I think it's either way, it's it clearly demonstrated the efficacy of surufatinib in this patient population.
Okay, great. And then the second question, could you talk about the totality of the evidence that you now have supporting the activity of surufatinib in patients that have either failed or relapsed after afinitor treatment?
Maybe give that to Weiguo also.
Well, I just want to clarify your question. We're talking about surufatinib activity post-afinitor treatment?
Post-afinitor, yeah.
All right. So, in the phase one/two study that we already published, when we initially noticed the activity of surufatinib actually post both surufatinib and afinitor, so clearly indicating a very different MOA of this particular agent, and also now further confirmed in Senate EP, this phase three randomized study. I think all the data, the subgroup analysis data will be further published. Right now we are just, sharing the top line results. We will publish more with these additional analysis. But clearly, the compound is active post afinitor treatment in this particular patient population. And also, supported to some extent by our study in the U.S., where almost 100% of patients had seen afinitor earlier. Although most of the data today were generated from PNET rather than EP net, but rather consistent from our phase one, phase two, and also now phase three data.
Okay. And then my final question, and maybe this is, maybe Dr. Yao can take this one. Just wondered if you could help us compare and contrast the Senate EP study to the Radiant 4 trial, to put those two in context, and maybe talk about your anecdotal experience with the drug versus afinitor. I suppose I'm trying to understand, is this going to be always going to be a second-line option to afinitor, or could there be at some point in the future physicians might prefer to use surufatinib up front?
Yeah, so I'm happy to talk about that a little bit. The patient population for these trials are both in essentially non-functional and extra-pancreatic neuroendocrine tumor, both for Radiant-4 and Senate-EP. Both of them use a 2-to-1 randomization. Both of them had a primary endpoint of progression-free survival. So I would say there are some differences, minor differences in the trials, but in terms of overall populations, they are relatively similar in terms of the eligibility and so forth. I think the other part of the question is, so what's my experience with surufatinib in anecdotal? So with all the caveats of anecdotal, experience, as you mentioned, the U.S. Phase 1 and Phase 1 expansion trials are in a everolimus pretreated population. And, at least in my experience, we've seen activity and with a very favorable safety profile, and is really pretty well tolerated by the patients. So I think there is a need for sure of additional therapeutic option for this group of patients, and having this available would be very good. And I think your other question in terms of lines of therapy, I think that's probably better for the company to discuss in terms of because that's more like a labeling issue.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard.
The next question comes in from the line of John Newman, calling from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead. Hi there, John. Is your line muted? It appears that we're having difficulties connecting with John, so we shall move on to the next question from Daniel Wilkinson, calling from Edison. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. I've just got a few. Just first off, on the Sanet EP data, obviously with this kind of net, we're looking at long OS. Are you expecting any OS data for this next year, and would you want to include that in the regulatory package? I'll go with that and have my next questions after. Thank you.
Weiguo, if you want to take that one.
The OS will not be included in the NDA package because it's not the primary endpoint. And also, remember, this is a study with a crossover design. So, and patients were crossed over at the time of disease progression. So you would not expect to see any meaningful OS difference, although we'll continue to follow up with the OS and publish at some point of time.
Okay, thank you. And then just, I know you haven't kind of reported on this, but looking at the strongest trends you've seen with that Sanet EP data when it comes to primary sites, has any particular primary sites for the cancer be shown a particular strength?
Again, Weiguo?
Yeah, I'll probably take on this one. Basically, you know, it's really heterogeneous, very fragmented. When you get to all the different subtypes, the sample size gets really small, basically, for each particular category. What we are seeing is that we are seeing a consistent, clear trend of efficacy for surufatinib, although for some, you know, smaller subtypes, the sample sizes getting too small for any meaningful statistical analysis, basically. But the trend is all very consistent.
Okay, thank you. And that's my final question just on the U.S. trial. You've obviously chosen soft tissue sarcoma as part of the expansion. Any thoughts around why that was attractive and why you're looking to go into that?
Maybe Marek can answer that one.
Yeah, so obviously that's another area of high unmet medical need. With our mechanism of action, which is considered by many experts a novel mix of FGFR, VEGF, and CSR1, I think there's high level of interest in sarcoma space. As you may know, with one withdrawal of approved agent in that space, there's even more hunger of innovative medicine. So obviously working with Memorial in this case and actually MD Anderson and others will be exploring single agent, but also we are looking at combination with PD-1, PD-L1 combos, where it's actually even more interest. So I would say stay tuned. I will report when we have signals, and the good news is it's ongoing. This is, I think, starting this call to be on.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question comes in from the line of Frank Gregory, calling from Trinity Delta. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Forgive what may seem a very naive question, but Dr. Su, when you were presenting the results, I believe on slide 13, where you had the patient flowchart, can you explain why so many patients discontinue treatment? I accept that it's much higher in the placebo group than it is in the active arm, but I was surprised at how high the discontinued treatment is, especially in line of the clean side effect profile we have. Is this something that I'm missing or not simply understanding?
Well, actually, we had to wait for a long time for these, to reach this level of discontinuation. Well, majority of these were due to disease progression. So we were the interim analysis was predefined in the protocol and driven by number of PFS events. So we actually had to wait until, you know, we reached this level of discontinuation rate or level of, the majority were patients were discontinued due to disease progression. And we, to have a meaningful interim analysis, we need to have, you just need to have that level of progression, disease progression or study discontinuation.
I've understood. So it's not.
Also, Frank, just one point. I mean, the SANET EP study was started, I believe it was the end of 2014. This was a 3-4 year study.
Yes, yes. I've understood what it is. Yes, absolutely right. No problem. Thank you.
The next question comes in from the line of John Newman, calling from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hey, sorry about that. This is Chris on for John Newman. Congratulations on the data. So just for the first question, could you remind me what was in the placebo group? Was it an active ingredient or anything like that?
No, it was a placebo-controlled study.
Okay. And for the different populations, because the study was done in China, just wondering if there are any meaningful differences between a more homogenous group, like the full Chinese study in this phase 3 trial, versus a more heterogeneous group, like one done in the U.S. or in the EU. Are there any potential subtype differences or anything like that?
Maybe Weiguang?
Well, not so much in terms of race. It's all Chinese, but I think the heterogeneity of this patient population is really due to different subtypes or the origin of the tumor origin.
Got it. Thanks. That's helpful.
Okay, the next question comes in from the line of Steve McGarry, calling from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. A couple of questions. Firstly, just following on from one of the previous questions, could you give us any more data on the timing of the discontinuations on the active drug? Was it an average of like 6 months, a year before you saw the discontinuations happening? And what was the average time overall?
I think on page 20 of the deck, Steve, it talks about the drug exposure and the median amount of time. So it's about 7 months was the median drug exposure on surufatinib, and the relative dose intensity about 86%. So as Weiguo said when he gave the brief presentation on that page, you know, that's an indication of very good tolerability. As we just said with Frank, you know, the reason for a high level of discontinuations is because we met the number of PFS events to be able to run the interim study or run the interim analysis on the study.
Oh, no, I completely get that. I was just trying to get a bit more detail as to when you saw the first discontinuations. Was that because of tolerability issues or was it disease progression early in the treatment cycle?
Weiguo, do you want to... any thoughts on that?
Patients were allowed to have drug holidays, right? They can if they experience intolerable side effects, they can stop taking the drug for a few days, or they can come back on. That's for both groups, both. Treatment and placebo groups, they have the option to do that, and there is a limit, of course. You cannot stop for a very long time, defined in the protocol. So, I have to say, 86% relative intensity to the maximum, for these patients, they stay on the treatment for, median PFS is 9.2 months. I think personally, I think this is quite you know, quite good and certainly, you know, acceptable.
Okay. Secondly, got about 19% of patients had grade 3 or higher proteinuria, and you said it was relatively easy to manage. Did that include dose reductions or drug holidays, or how did you manage that?
The patients were required to do regular urine tests, and they have to monitor protein level in the urine. And I think these will be ultimately published, but also will be in the label as well, how they manage, you know, how they manage the proteinuria. Typically, grade 1 urea, proteinuria, no issue. You can continue your treatment. Grade 2, you may have to, you know, take off the drug for a few days until you, your proteinuria goes back to grade 1 or below, then you can continue the treatment. Grade 3, you have to, grade 3 proteinuria, you have, you probably have to not only take off the drug for a few days, and, you know, but also reduce the dose to maybe, you know, to a lower dose. So it's all, it's like a, there's a grid. All the physicians have that grid, and how they manage the proteinuria in particular.
Okay. And then just finally, you've sort of two cases of grade 5 tox. I'm assuming they weren't adjudged to be treatment-related.
I mean, the overall deaths on treatment between the two groups were relatively similar. So we clearly didn't see a strong signal in terms of grade 5 toxicity. And relatively low as well.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
The next question comes in from the line of Ling Wang calling from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. Just wondering, the median PFS that we observed in the phase 3 study seems to be lower than what we saw in the phase 2 study, and also for the placebo PFS of about, 3.8 months, it also seems to be lower than, you know, what you guys have expected. Can you explain why that might happen? Is that because of the patient population might be different from what you have expected?
Waigo, maybe you handle that.
Yeah, I think there are obviously, you know, multiple factors here. Clearly, with regard to the median PFS, you know, we believe there are multiple factors. One in particular is the patient population, as you just pointed out, as I mentioned in the presentation, in almost opposite to other global trials with Sutin and everolimus. In this particular study, the great majority of patients were having G2 disease. So these are more aggressive, obviously, as compared to, you know, 70-80% of patients with G1 disease, a grade 1 disease. So these are, you know, obviously patients with more aggressive disease, they're having progressive tumors. So should have an impact on the on the median PFS. So I think you need to take these in perspective. It's very difficult to compare one study to the other without paying attention to these details. The other thing you mentioned about phase two versus phase three. Obviously, phase two is a single-arm study and conducted in the handful of hospitals where these are probably only 8 hospitals involved in the phase two open-label study. These are all top clinical centers, and these are top physicians, very experienced in neuroendocrine tumors. A lot of it is, you know, the PFS. A lot of it has to do with how these physicians can manage, for instance, side effects and keep these patients on treatment without, you know, going off, you know, off to holidays, due drug holidays due to AEs and so forth. So when you expand to, you know, 28, 30 centers from, you know, a handful, only 6 to 8 centers, it makes a big difference. So it's not surprising. I think that this data is much more robust and more reliable than any single arm phase one or phase two expansion type studies. This is obviously much more objective.
Can I add one additional point to what Weigel has just said there? I mean, that's probably one of the most obvious differences between the China studies and the global studies is the percentage of grade 2 patients in the in the SANET EP study, as Weigel said, was over 84%. Normally, in global studies, you see 70 or 80% grade 1 patients. It's because they're being diagnosed earlier. And it kind of goes to what we talked earlier on about how in China probably the net prevalence is underestimated because diagnosis isn't as sophisticated as the US probably. And so I think that in general, you're seeing a more advanced patient population in China, more challenging patients further along. And that's going to affect both the placebo-controlled median PFS as well as the treatment arm, and that's why it's very, very dangerous to be comparing cross-trial SANET EP versus Radiant 4, for example. You've got quite different patient populations and stage of disease, essentially.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you, Ling. Thank you.
We currently have no further questions coming through, so I shall hand you back over to your host for any closing remarks.
Great. Thank you, Courtney. Well, I think we very much appreciate everybody being on the call today. I think we've managed to do it in an hour, almost exactly, and some very good questions. And once again, thank you very much to Dr. James Yao for taking the time to spend with us today. So thanks, everybody, for coming, and I'm sure we'll speak soon. Thank you, Courtney.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now disconnect your handsets. Hosts, please stay connected.